Andy, I told Andy, I made a suggestion to Andy that I'm going to ask her a couple of questions. So we kind of get the, you know, like a social party sort of thing. There's a few things you need to know about people first, and then they can kind of do the speaking. Andy, how many years have you been part of River Church?
Nearly 20. And I was invited nearly 20 years ago when I moved to Cookham, and I got a random phone call from Anne Kingston to say, would you like to come to Cookham Church? It's once a fortnight. I thought I could manage once a fortnight.
So I guess you must have been like a teenager at that time when you got that call, right? Yeah, that's good. So Andy, 20 years, tell us the sort of stuff that you've done as part of church, because you're not an upfront server, you're more of a behind-the-scenes server. Give us a bit of a glimpse. So what have you got up to behind the scenes down the years?
I hope Anne's ears are really red, because it's her fault I'm here. If she'd never invited me, I wouldn't be up the front. No, actually, I've not done much. I've just looked after Song Pro. And a bit of thankful.
Hang on. I know for a fact my wife Laura has come back saying how blessed she's been with you and what you've done at Sanctuary. So don't just do the just Song Pro business. Yes, you are very humble though. And you have quite an interesting and challenging job. Tell us a little bit about that as well.
Well, I started life in IT and then God moved me to become a school business manager. So I'm now, like Robin, a bursar.
Go on. How challenging is the bursar role? Because Robin makes it sound like it's so hard, but I actually think secretly it's quite easy. Where is he?
It's a bit mixed.
Sure, you don't actually have to deal with children, though. That's the hard bit, right?
No, they're the really easy bit.
Okay. All this. Yeah. Brilliant. Andy, I'm really looking forward to this. And over to you. God bless you.
Thank you. One of my favourite verses in the Bible is Hebrews 12, verse 1, which tells us to run with perseverance the race that's been set before us. And I thought before I began my talk, I'd start with a short clip that really shows how I run in the real world. My running has always been a source of ridicule to my friends and family. When my son Bill was young, somebody finally told me, I run like a mum. I thought, fantastic, what an achievement. So when Hebrews tells us to run with perseverance the race that's been set before us, my run through life is a bit of a Phoebe-like run. Later in that chapter, verses 12 to 13 in the Message say, so don't sit around on your hands, no more dragging your feet. Clear the path for long-distance runners so no one will trip and fall. So no one will step in a hole and sprain an ankle. Help each other out and run for it. So despite my Phoebe-like run through life, I thought I'd share today what I've learnt so far. And I'm not a teenager. I'm now 50. Woo! And I thought when I started to prepare this talk that I knew 8 things. But actually, when I prepared the talk, I only know 4. And I'm aiming to share those 4 things today. Because unlike Mike Holt, who several weeks ago started his talk by saying, I've been so looking forward to this. I've lived in terror. I went to France last week and I put on 4 pounds. And I lost them all in the toilet last night. So I'm figuring if I tell you everything I know today, I can't be asked back. So here are my life lessons. Life lesson number 1. Be a why not person. It's how you'll have adventures. In the past, when I've told friends what I'm doing, they ask me why. And often I've felt a little silly. Because I don't really have a sensible answer, all I can say is why not. And my friends are sensible and wise, so I've struggled with the fact that that's a rather weak answer, until God showed me what he can do with a why not attitude. Many years ago, Susan Rimmer asked me to do Song Pro at church, and my reply was why not. I couldn't really see why, to be honest, but why not was fine. that eventually led to me serving on the sanctuary team, and that eventually led to me going to Nepal on a mission trip. That Nepal trip led me to spend time with two women I didn't know very well, Sadie Barnes and Karen Weir. Now, as a single person, I really value having an amazing set of friends and family. They're my social life, they're my supporters, and they're my advisors. And I am very blessed by having Sadie and Karen as two of my friends. Now, the trip to Nepal wasn't easy. That's really out of my comfort zone. And the only reason I had the courage to say why not was because it was being run by Rachel, who I completely trust and respect, and because of Pat Hunt. If you haven't spent time talking to Pat Hunt about the adventures she's had so far in her life, you need to do it. She is an inspiration. I listened to her and I thought, I want to be like Pat, and I still do. I can remember sitting in the back of Graham and Anne Burgess's car on the way to the airport to go to Nepal, and I thought, I just have to survive 216 hours. And I was with Anne and Karen, and they looked really composed. We got to the airport and we checked in, and I thought, 215 hours to go. But during that trip, I discovered that actually I can put up with most things, and I do find most problems hysterically funny. I found some amazing American travel sickness pills that meant the 8-hour bus journey from Kathmandu to Pokhara was not a huge problem, which I'd been really worried about. By then, we were down to just over 156 hours. I was still counting down. That journey gave us some of our most remarkable stories. Our first toilet stop. We queued, which always good to be British abroad. And then Rachel went in. She came straight back out. And she said, you have to come in too. So Karen and I went in and we discovered a little Nepalese lady sat on a stool, watching. And a urinal. A communal urinal. We looked at it and we thought, do you go? Or do you go? Eventually we settled on backwards and we managed to pee without touching our clothes or our shoes. And from that point on, every toilet we used was luxury. We survived mouldy hotel rooms, certain members of the party snoring, a road closure with a dust storm that meant that you had to walk as if you were blind. And for me, I survived on a diet of chickpea curry. As well as gaining two new friends, the other blessing I took from Nepal was a real increased confidence in being an adventurer. That led me to spending 2.5 weeks this year backpacking around Cuba, something I would never have thought I could have done a few years ago. Cuba is an amazing country. No one spoke English, so we survived on my very lousy Spanish. We went from town to town and we stayed with locals. I walked in tropical rainforests. I rode horseback to a tobacco farm where I smoked a Cuban cigar. I swam under waterfalls. I went to Nepal to bless the women there, but God's blessed me back 100-fold. I have new friends and an attitude of what I'm capable of. I've also said why not, and I've served God with things that have been a real chore. I've served when I didn't feel like it. I've served when I didn't have the time, and I've served when I've got absolutely nothing out of the experience, but the job's been done. So I'm not saying that every time we serve God, we get a huge blessing, but I am saying that sometimes he just blesses us back 100-fold. I wouldn't have got to dance in the streets of Havana with a Cuban in the middle of the night without saying why not to God. My life lesson number 2 is to be an overcomer. Don't carry anger or bitterness. You need to forgive others and move on. When my mum was pregnant with my older brother, her fiancé died. She's carried anger and bitterness about that life event all of her life. And the result is she's missed out on God's blessings for her. My mum is a remarkable woman. Until recently, when she's become poorly, she's been intelligent. She's been mentally strong. She's been physically fit and active. But she hasn't grabbed all of life's opportunities because she's been so focused on how her life should have been and not how it is. When I was a teenager, I saw how that affected her life. And I swore that I would never do that, no matter what life threw at me. Achieving that hasn't been easy, but the alternative just isn't appealing. I think the secret to forgiveness and moving on is all in the timing. You need to give yourself time to heal first and then focus on forgiving. Bill's dad, as some of you know, left when he was 18 months old, and that took me a long time to deal with. Once I'd got to the point that I'd got myself together, I was still really angry. And I'm sure you've met all those angry ex-husbands and ex-wives who decades later haven't got over that event. I prayed to God that he would forgive Bill's dad every day. And those prayers really stuck in my throat. I could barely speak them, and I certainly didn't mean them. But I kept going, and eventually God changed my attitude, and I could completely forgive him and wish him well. I've had a lot of life events that have been very challenging, some through my own decisions and some that have just happened. But I feel life's not about what happens to you, it's about how you deal with what happens to you. And that brings me very neatly to life lesson number 3. Be happy in the now. There are times for pain and grief in our lives that are unavoidable. But much of life seems to be waiting for this phase or that stage to be over so that you can get to the next one. And I think we need to change the now so we can be happy in the present. For me, my biggest prayer for years was for a new husband. I really didn't like being single. Single for me meant empty weekends. It meant no one to listen or support me. The feeling that I could disappear or even drop dead and no one would notice. Kerry Davis wrote a letter for me years ago that talked about how she felt that God's plan for me at the time was to find him in being single. I really didn't like that letter. It was a horrible letter, but I did keep it. And it's fine now. I spent years dating guys who weren't right for me and they weren't the best for me, whilst desperately trying to believe I could make those relationships work. Now I love my single life. My married friends comment on what an amazing life I have, and it makes me smile, which did for a while make me feel guilty because I don't like to think I'm a smug person. But then I realised that I'm smiling because God has transformed my life in a way that other people can see it's amazing. I have a great family. I've made connections with my aunts that are so strong, they say I'm their youngest sister. And it was one of my aunts that I travelled to Cuba with, and her and Bill that I climbed Ben Nevis with last summer. I have 3 sets of amazing friends that I go away for weekends with, and I'm part of a church friends group that is fun and supportive. I have other close friends that I go down the pub with, that I walk with, that I talk to, and I love my job working in a special needs school where I feel I make a difference to some of society's most vulnerable children. And I have a home that's my sanctuary. The things I didn't like about my single life don't exist. I don't have empty weekends. I don't feel I could disappear and no one would notice. And I do feel really supported. To be happy in the now, we need to work on changing the now so that whilst God works in whatever way he will, we can find contentment in where we are today so that today isn't about waiting for tomorrow. Before moving on to my final life lesson, I should just note for the record that should Matt LeBlanc or Sean Bean want to ask me out for dinner, I might be able to find a slot in my schedule. My life lesson number 4 is to share your faith in your own unique way. We've talked a lot at the moment about how we share our faith with our Walk Across the Room series, so I thought I'd share with you how I share mine. Firstly, I wait until I know people, until I reveal I'm a Christian. I recently tried sharing my faith with a salesman I'd just met, and I watched his eyes glaze over before me, which really confirmed to me that God uses each one of us differently. So I get to know the person first, and then I drop it into conversation. I often say I chose the Christian faith because Jesus' first miracle was turning water into wine, and the Christian church accepts me without even blinking. What's not to like about that kind of a religion? Then I tell funny stories, and I tell them frequently until it's just part of who they know I am. I've done that to my boss, Rich. He's an amazing guy. He's a fab leader. He's intelligent. He's fun to be with. He meditates, and he's got a leaning towards Buddhism. So I'm not out to convert him. I respect his choice. I've told him lots of funny stories about you guys. And me. He's had the communal peeing in a trough one. And each month after my leadership development course with River, I've told him all the highlights because he's really into that kind of research. He leaves the school at the end of August, and he gave me a letter at the end of term. In the letter, he includes a quote from Buddha about how the wise live their lives. And then he says, "I think I see a lot of your own wisdom in this. Your faith is a real and living flame within you and drives you to deliver welfare and happiness. That is a hard quality to find, and I hope you keep it forever." What I find amazing about this letter is that he sees in me the person that God wants me to be. I fail to be that person every single day. And the environment that I fail most in is school. As I've said, I'm not out to convert Richard, but given our shared sense of humour and our shared stories, I think he shares the funniest ones. His wife used to be a Christian, so maybe God is reaching her through our shared funny stories. So for me, sharing my faith is with people I know, who give me that jaw-drop look when I tell them I'm a Christian, because I'm flawed, I swear, I fail and I screw up, and they wonder how a faith and a church can happily accept someone like me. But equally, I think underneath it all, they see something that sets me out from others. When I spoke to Kerry about my talk, she told me to work out how to finish. It's easy to get to the end and not have an ending. And she was right. When I wrote this, I thought, how do I end? That's it. That's all I've got to say. So here's a recap on my 4 points. Be a why not person. Have adventures and talk to Pat. Be an overcomer. Forgive others and move on. And learn to be happy in the now. And finally, share your faith in your own unique way. So finally, I started with a clip from Friends, which is very apt considering just how highly I value my friends. So I'm finishing. Chris, can you play the final
clip? Which I think really speaks to people. So I just want to honour for you that and say thank you.